All right, hey, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is, what the hell is it, the 26th of April, 2024. It is Friday. Oh, yes, let's get our sexy Friday voices on. Glorious Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. Looking forward to the week in effing review. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. If you ever thought, Derek tug dirty to me, you get that every Saturday morning at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which, you know, can get you to bed on Friday night on the West Coast. Yes, filthy talk about everybody's sexiest topic, the news of the week. Check it out, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Let's not get everybody too aroused. Let's get on with the show so we can get on with the weekend. There's a lot going on. There's a bunch of things to talk about, but yeah, we got to talk about the big economic news that came out this morning. GDP growth slowing down significantly. Bum, bum, bum. Unexpectedly. Nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. It was expected to grow at, I believe, 2.5% was the projected number. It was Goldman Sachs predicted a 3.1% growth in the first quarter of 2024. Most economists had it at 2.5%. It ended up being 1.6%. 1.6%. You sit there and you go, how can these people get it so wrong? Well, first of all, there are no consequences for getting it wrong, so why not? Most of these projections are wishful thinking. And one of the things that I can say about wishful thinking is the wishes always seem to favor Democrats. At least it seems that way to me. I haven't seen a study on this, but it sure seems like the wishes always favor Democrats. Everybody's expecting. They set expectations. Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. Stop worrying. Stop fretting. Don't sweat it. It's going to be good. And then it's not good. When it's Republicans, that's really seemingly the only time you hear the phrase, better than economists expected. Because it's human beings making these things, making these predictions. And there's a wishful thinking, projectionism, whatever you want to call it. People sitting around going, "Go, I support this candidate. I don't like this candidate. Oh, wait. The other candidate was actually good. They keep on beating my expectations." Sometimes they play the expectations game the other way, where they set expectations really high. That's a different story altogether. But the Biden administration keeps on telling us what? That everything is going great. The economy is booming, even though they stopped using the phrase Bidenomics. They created the term Bidenomics to take credit for the economy back when they were convinced they could. Back when they were convinced that there was something worth taking credit for. Oh, Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics is working. And then there's no indication of anything, any unit of measure that anybody uses in real life. Even economists can't cook the books to the point that they can make it seem as though Bidenomics is working. So rather than change course, rather than admit the problem, rather than do something about it to try and make a constructive change, they simply stop talking about it because they recognize it doesn't matter. They don't care. They have other priorities that are way more important than your ability to afford groceries or be able to afford auto insurance, be able to afford gasoline to get to work. They have other priorities than whether or not you can pay your mortgage. You know all those anti-Semitic mutants out there chanting about death to Israel? Somebody's got to pay their student loans. It's you. You look around going, who's the sucker going to get stuck with that tab? Yeah, find a mirror. That's the Biden administration's priority. You can't afford to feed your family. The economy is slowing down, and the Biden administration is making sure that there's no judging, no deportation, no restrictions to prevent them from working on the illegal aliens that have flooded into the country, the 10 to God knows 20 million illegal aliens in there. They are the priority, not you. Shut up, pay your taxes. Shut up and pay your taxes. Yeah, the economy is slowing down. What does it matter? The illegal aliens are doing well. Those students have had their student loans forgiven. Just as a harbinger of things to come. I found this audio, I saw this video yesterday on Twitter, and it's fascinating to me. It's from Wendy's. I haven't been to a Wendy's, I don't know. Every once in a while, my wife will order the kids. She'll mix up the nuggets from McDonald's and she'll get Wendy's. Wendy's is good food. I think for my money, Wendy's fries are the best. McDonald's fries taste great, but they're so, I don't know, scrawny kind of. Wendy's fries have some substance to them and they taste just as good, if not better. So for my money, Wendy's has the best fries. I just don't go to Wendy's very often. And if I'm inclined to go to a fast food joint, I usually drive through Burger King and just get an Impossible Whopper with a ton of pickles. Just that cholesterol's a bit high, and so I figured do that, and then put a ton of pickles on anything, a ton of pickles on a burger, just make the burger anyway. And it actually tastes pretty damn good, but whatever, neither here nor there. Somebody was driving through, and I don't know, it's from this year, but I don't know how recently this is, and I don't know where this is. But I've experienced this at other fast food places, at least for the greeting part. You go to McDonald's. I don't know how most pronounced. On occasion, I will pick up the girls some like 20 McNugget thing and some fries on the way home from McDonald's. And you drive up to the McDonald's around here, seemingly all of them. I guess I've really only ever driven up to two of them around here, but that's beside the point. The initial greeting is not the person who takes your order. It's, hello, welcome to McDonald's. Will you be using your mobile app today? And it's, there's no accent, so you know that it's not a real person there. But it, once you say no, then the person comes on and it's a different person. What can I get you? I don't know if I don't use the mobile apps for ordering fast food, but if you use the mobile app, I wonder if you even talk to a human being. I don't know. I suspect that if you say yes, then it'll say, what is your order number? Because I know how it works, but I don't do it. And then you enter that. I wonder if you never have a conversation with a human being. That day is coming. That day is coming very soon. Now, this is a very simple order at Wendy's. I don't know how this could handle this AI. This might even be before AI or pre-AI. I don't know how this automated system could handle a complex order where, you know, I don't even know what a Wendy's hamburger is called. I think they're singles. I'll have a single with extra cheese. I don't know how it would handle that. But in ordering a Frosty, it works perfectly well.
Welcome to Wendy's. What would you like?
Can I have a chocolate Frosty?
Which size for the chocolate Frosty?
Medium.
Can I get you anything else today?
No, thank you.
Great. Please pull up to the next window.
Now, they need to work on the speed with which this thing recognizes that you're done talking, but this is the future of fast food. This is the future of fast food. This is the future of a lot of jobs out there. A lot of jobs out there. They're called menial jobs. They're not menial jobs. Look, no job is a menial job, or it wouldn't exist. If it was menial, it would be unnecessary. But there are a lot of jobs, and I've done a lot of them, having had over 80 jobs in my life, that you sit there and you go, boy, if a robot will be able to do this one day. Not too far in the distant future. And now with artificial intelligence, that day is coming sooner. And so you really have to wonder what's going on at the southern border and how that ties into our economic future, don't you? There was an argument to be made, and Democrats try to make it after decades of saying, Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. How dare you say that? Now they say, in order to maintain grandma's lifestyle, what do you want, grandma to die? We need a whole bunch of illegal aliens to come in to pay into the Social Security and Medicare. But I thought those weren't Ponzi schemes. They're not Ponzi schemes. They're just, you know, different government programs that need a whole bunch of people paying into them to pay off the benefits of current beneficiaries. Oh, you mean like a Ponzi scheme, right? See, Bernie Madoff, if people had not decided to withdraw some of their massive earnings, I guess that's the closest thing to a right word, that Bernie Madoff had made them, Bernie Madoff would still be going just fine. More people would be throwing money into it, and that's all that matters. More people throwing money into it than taking money out. A Ponzi scheme can last forever if you have an unlimited supply of people throwing money into it relative to the number of people taking money out. That's what the Democrats are now telling us is why we have to have and why we need these illegal aliens coming across the border and why you shouldn't be mad about it. Because, look, we need somebody to fund these government programs. Well, these people coming across the southern border, quite frankly, are mostly not able to communicate in English. Will they someday be able to? Sure, probably. But that doesn't matter. That could be especially depending on how old they are and how enthusiastic they are at the proposition, years away. Years, just imagine how long it would take you to learn a new language. It would take me forever to learn a new language. But it is years away, so then you've got them doing, what, menial tasks at best. Again, I don't like that word, but it's the word. Yet those are the jobs that, A, our horrible education system is exceedingly good at churning out people for, right? Not teaching people to read, not teaching people to be able to do basic math, not teaching people to think for themselves, how to think. No, they, you know, you'll be able to name more pronouns than you can presidents by the time you graduate from public schools, and that's kind of a problem. So they say, well, we need the illegals because we need them to do these jobs. Well, they can't communicate. How do they do those jobs? They're a net drag on society. Their children come in not able to communicate. That slows down the public education system. You can't have a separate education system designed specifically to teach them English because separate but equal, problematic, true, but then you end up slowing down everybody else's progress so the race can only go as fast as the slowest student. It's not much of a race. It's a saunter at best. So you have all these problems, these people coming in. Meanwhile, technology is saying, that's nice. You got this plan to bring in low-skilled, no-skilled workers. Can't communicate. It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. We're creating technology that basically renders them all but unemployable, all but worthless. Not just illegal aliens, but Americans. And you go, well, where, how does this end? And the answer is not well. The answer is not well. The answer is you watch the GDP slow down. The only way out of our current problem, the only way out of our massive debt, our massive deficit, all of it, is massive growth. You can cut a lot, but you're never really going to be able to cut enough at this point. You could have, you know, 20 years ago if these people had been responsible, even 10 years ago with the penny plan where you cut 1% of every dollar spent. You could have eventually righted the ship. It's too late now not to do it in any timely fashion because you're dealing with a population crunch as more and more baby boomers retire. People are having fewer and fewer kids. There's a need for fewer and fewer workers. And it's all just turning into this giant cluster of a mess that sooner or later, and the emphasis is on sooner, is going to be a disaster if we don't have real political leadership to deal with it. And right now, the guy in the White House, we do not have real political leadership. Not even anywhere close. Dangerously. Unrealistic. Now, Joe Biden is running around patting himself on the back, claiming to have cut the national debt. Now, I should explain there's a difference between debt and deficit, right? Deficit is annually the budget shortfall between how much you bring in, how much the government brings in, and how much the government spends. That's the deficit, the annual deficit. The debt is the sum total of all previous deficits, right? See the difference? This debt. Joe Biden knows this. He's been around since, you know, forever. And yet, in this, the RNC put together this clip of Joe Biden claiming to have cut the debt. And it is it's something to behold because it shows you just how confused Joe Biden is. Now, he's comparing, of course, it goes back to my famous saying, if you control the unit of measure, you control everything and you can prove anything. He claims to have cut the debt in half in this. Now, he's not cut the debt. In fact, he's only added to the debt. Last year, the deficit was $1.7 trillion. That's just the budget deficit. That doesn't count the money that was added to the national debt by interest on the national debt. But who's going to hold him responsible? Nobody. Nobody in the media. Nobody who's going to get within shouting distance of him. So they put together at the RNC this montage of him saying, "I've cut the debt." He means to say the deficit, but he also. It only works if you control the unit of measure. And he chooses the year that makes the most, the only sense for him when it comes to the deficit. And that would be the year of COVID, 2020. When Republicans and Democrats, he wants to blame Donald Trump for that, but you can remember who controlled Congress at the time because they impeached Donald Trump. That would be Democrats. They impeached him twice over garbage. They racked up a $3.1 trillion deficit that year. Joe Biden's deficit for 2023 is $1.7 trillion. Dollars up from the previous year. That means that the deficit that Joe Biden is running has gone up. It has increased under him. He doesn't mention that in this. Instead, and by the way, if you're playing the home game, 3.1 trillion minus 1.7 trillion equals 1.4 trillion. I believe Joe Biden throughout this talks about how he cut the deficit $1.7 trillion. That would be him comparing it to 2022 numbers, which, again, just in government spending for his budget, he then added another $400 billion to it. But that's beside the point. You get lost in numbers. Just know that what you're hearing is a confused old man who doesn't know the difference between a debt and a deficit and is straight up lying to you about the way government works, the way spending works, and what he has done as president.
I cut the national debt by $1.7 trillion.
We literally cut the federal debt in half by $1.4 trillion.
$1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion cut.
We cut the debt by $1.7 billion in the last 2 years.
Let me say that again. $1.7 trillion.
I reduced the budget by $1.7 billion. Okay? I reduced the debt.
We cut the federal debt in half. Fact.
In the first 2 years of my administration, I cut the debt by $1.7
trillion. $1.7
billion. $1.7 trillion. $1.7
trillion. $1.7 trillion.
$7 billion.
$1.7 trillion.
$1.7 billion. It's a trillion dollars. Not billion, $1 trillion.
$1.7 trillion. Hear me?
No one's ever reduced the debt that much.
Yeah, nobody still has. And he doesn't know, is it millions, billions, trillions, quadrillion? He doesn't know. It doesn't matter. The underlying numbers are a lie. The national debt at the end of the 2020 fiscal year was $26,945,000,000,000. After 2021, the last fiscal year of the Trump presidency, the national debt was $28,428,000,000,000. 2022, the first year of Joseph Robinette Biden's presidency, the national debt somehow became $30,928,000,000,000. Clearly, that's more by $1.5 trillion. But he cut it in half. How is that possible? Because he's lying to you. After 2023, just last year, the national debt, $33,176,000,000,000. Now, if you're playing the home game, that's a more than $2 trillion increase in our national debt in one fiscal year. One fiscal year, two solid fiscal years after Donald Trump left office. How is that possible for a guy who's running around talking about how fiscally responsible he is? Well, he's the same guy who will tell you that 1.6% growth in the quarter, almost a full point, 0.9% lower than expectations, which were already set low because people know you can't set the expectations too high when you're dealing with Joe Biden. They can't even make that. The same guy is going to tell you that his economy is working. You don't know how good you've got it. You're too stupid to understand how good you've got it. I guess we'll find out how stupid people are. You know, that's what elections are for. Will they fall for this? I don't know. God, I hope not. God, I genuinely hope not. All right, so as we're sitting there looking at these bogus numbers and or the bogus claims about the economy from the President of the United States, he's actually on the I've reduced the debt, it's $1.7 trillion, and even deficit, depending on which one he's talking about, has been fact-checked and been shown to be a liar by some of the mainstream things. It's telling what they choose to fact-check and what they don't. The other day, he claimed again, for like, I don't know, the third time in 2 years, that he used to drive a big rig truck. Yeah, he said that he used to troll the highways with his pet monkey in the 70s and with his pet monkey bear. And I just unbelievable. I used to drive a big rig. He's never worked a manual labor job in his life. The closest thing he's ever had to a job outside of the public sector is when he was a lifeguard and rumbling with Corn Pop when he was 17 years old. That's it. That's it. His whole life has been from then in college and then in elected office. But he's, or on the government teat, and what, you think he worked for the local government there in Delaware for a, in Wilmington for a bit before running for the Senate. And you go, how, when did you find time to drive a truck? I'd like to see him try and drive a stick, honestly, because I think that'd be funny. I think he'd probably hurt himself, pull something, might lose an eye. I don't know. But I'd pay money to watch him drive, try and drive a big wheel, or a big wheel, I mean, a big rig. I'd just see him put this in gear and move it 10 feet, Mr. President. Just go ahead, please. Regale us all. We'll get you one from the 60s or 70s or whatever it was you claimed to have been trolling the open roads as a guy who's been in the Senate since 1972. Not really sure when you had the time, but let's do this thing. You wouldn't be able to do it. But they fact-check that. They fact-check that. They don't fact-check his, you know, random claims about how incredible Bidenomics is working and everything. They're not interested in that. But that's, I mean, what can you expect? The president, by the way, he had a senior moment yesterday in, I think it might have been Florida. I don't know. It doesn't really matter where. Does it matter where your car breaks? And you're not calling a tow truck. Doesn't matter where your car breaks down. But the president of the United States was reading a teleprompter. Now, I don't know if you know how teleprompters work. You probably don't. You've probably never seen one at work. But they, depending on the size, Barack Obama used to have a giant, like 55-inch screen TVs on either side of the room. And boy, he could read a speech like nobody's business. He'd go from left teleprompter to right teleprompter, back to left teleprompter. He never looked straight. If you look at that, if you watch the footage of him, except for when the crowd was applauding, he'd look forward, he'd jut out his chin, Mussolini style, and yes, you love me. And then he'd go back to talking, right, left, right. He's like watching somebody watch tennis. That's how he did it, like teleprompter, teleprompter, teleprompter. And the words are written in big and bold letters, and there are certain things that are in parentheses. Same thing if you're in a television studio and you're on, and you're most of the time you're in a remote room, but sometimes you're in the actual room with the host. I'd go on with Shannon Bream, and you could see the teleprompter. Now, Shannon Bream is very smart, very nice, but the introduction to the topic was the only part that was ever on the teleprompter. It's like, here's the basic gist of the story, setting up the segment, and then for discussion we turn to these people, blah, blah, blah. There were things in, there's sort of like stage directions if you've ever seen a script or for a play or a movie. Stage directions are in parentheses. Like if in the setup for a piece, today in Washington, D.C., Congress debated the such and such bill and blah, blah, blah. And then in parentheses it says it goes to clip. So you be quiet during that, because that's when the clip is playing. Unless you know, get up to that word and stop, and you'll hear the package, and then when the package is done, you go again. You don't read out loud what's in the parentheses. Applause is often in the parentheses. There are moments where they set up things that the parentheses are there to let the speaker know what's going to happen next, that something else is going to happen. Well, Joe Biden read the parentheses yesterday, talking about his reelection campaign. Now, you want to talk about a lack of enthusiasm, awareness, pulse, maybe even? Listen to the energy that Joe brings into this clip. And then he says, now, if you haven't seen it, you may have heard this before, but if you haven't seen the clip of him reading the teleprompter here and reading the parentheses, find it, seek it out. Do yourself a favor and seek it out, because he has one of the most confused looks on his face you could ever possibly imagine. He says, pause. And then he looks squinty-eyed at the teleprompter like, what the hell is pause for? And he mouths pause again. He doesn't say it the second time, but he mouths it kind of like, what the hell, pause? What do you mean pause? That doesn't make any sense. Like an angry grandpa, mad that the potatoes are too lumpy. Pause. What do you mean pause? You'll also notice that right after he says 4 more years in a way that is in absolutely no conceivable way inspiring, even to a crowd of supporters, that would cause them to go, yeah, 4 more years, 4 more. Usually the chant of 4 more years is kind of at a crescendo moment. You're building up to it. Oh, you're getting very excited. And then and what we're going to do next is going to be amazing. 4 more years, 4 more years. He's like a guy who just woke up after hitting the snooze button for about an hour. And he says, well, we can do in 4 more years. Pause. But before he said, or while he says the pause, there's a guy, and I guarantee you, I promise you this. The one guy you hear enthusiastically on cue, that's why I say this, scream, starting to chant 4 more years, that guy's on staff. That guy has been coached. That guy's ready. That guy's waiting for it. That guy's sitting someplace near a microphone, near a crowd mic, waiting for his moment to try and start the chant. People don't realize this, but so much of politics is theater. And there are people who go out there and at this moment, you've got to start a chant, try and start a chant. And so you get one, two, three people out there, depending on the crowd size, to try and start a chant at various moments. And then you get everybody else involved. It's really easy to get a large crowd to start chanting. It's really easy to get a large crowd to do the wave, whatever it is. You can do these sorts of things to manipulate crowds. Now, it's tougher for Joe Biden because there's literally nothing inspiring about the guy. And he's reading the stage directions, and his crescendo is falling asleep. So we need what we can do in four more years. Pause. The pause was for the chant. That's why at the moment of the he says pause, the guy starts screaming four more years to try and get the union hall, which is also they're already partisan, they've already been screened, they're on the team, to start chanting four more years. But Joe Biden has no freaking clue what's going on at all. Find the video, you'll see him mouth it, pause, and a confused look on his face, and then about a second and a half later there's the oh, yeah, they're chanting four more. Look on it like it just came back. The Adderall kicked in. I don't know what to tell you. It's not the best thing to you can't really see, you can't see it at all on the radio. But that's why you can hear what I'm talking about. Most of it anyway.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years. Four more years.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause. You know what? Now that I think about it, the four more years part might have been in parentheses too. Right? Because imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Unless it's probably a more coherent sentence in the teleprompter. Imagine what we could do now or do next with four more years. And then people go, oh, four more years, four more years. But you can tell there's nothing inspirational about the cadence, the delivery, the nothing at all. And so you're like, imagine what we could do. Four more years. Pause. There are people in that crowd with the script, staffers, ready to go. When he says this and he hits it, you start chanting four more years. And he had no idea. What's going on? What, four more years of what? Why is the parole board thinking about not letting me out? Four more? Huh? Who am I? Why am I here? Now, also yesterday, Joe Biden, God, he really thinks he's a tough guy. I really want somebody to pick him, take him up on his push-up challenge. Or when he says, look, pal, you know, well, you're a dog-faced, lying dog-faced pony soldier. We can go outside this building right now and have at it and see how tough you are. I'd like somebody to go, all right, Gramps, let's do it. Because Joe Biden, I've told the story before about meeting Art Linkletter back in like 2003 or whatever when I was at the Heritage Foundation. And I shook his hand, and he was very old then, and it was he was so old. His only life goal at that point was to live long enough to like 2010, I think, when the inheritance tax went down to zero for 1 year, and he did it. He did it. God bless him. But shaking his hand at CPAC was like picking up a Ziploc bag full of gravy and chicken bones. Just kind of that. If you've ever put soup in a Ziploc bag with some solid, it's like that's what it felt like. I could easily crush this man's hand. I imagine that's what it's like with Joe Biden. I want to see somebody take him up on it. You know, hey, Joe, we don't have to do push-ups. We don't have to box. How about we see who can traverse a normal flight of stairs best? Huh? A challenge that he can't accept. Hey, who can climb up a normal ramp of stairs on a tarmac rather than the little kid one that you have to come off of Air Force One on? Can we do that? Anyway, Joe is talking about how he'd like to punch Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is just listen to this guy. It's pathetic.
Donald Trump's vision of America is one of revenge and retribution. A defeated former president who sees the world from Mar-a-Lago on
bows down to billionaires, who looks down on American union workers. It's not just he's not supporting, he looks down on us. I'm not joking. Think about it. Think about the guys you grew up with, you'd like to get into the corner and just give them a straight left. I'm not suggesting we hit the president. But we all know those guys growing up. We all know guys like that growing up. My vision of America is one of hope and opportunity. The view from Scranton, working class Americans like you.
Yeah, no, it's hope. And I love how he lumps himself in there. He does, he looks down at union guys like us. You're not a union guy, Joe. You've never been in a union. You've never been a big rig driver. You've never been in a union. You've never had to shower from work. You've showered for work your entire adult life. You don't have a damn clue what it's like to be the people you're talking to, that their political hacks and their union goons and they'll do what they're told is the only reason you have support. These people would likely drag your ass out of their bar if you weren't a president of the United States. Sipping your beer with your pinky out going, you savages, you people look so dirty. But Donald Trump, on the other hand, his whole life has worked around construction workers, has worked around blue-collar workers. Joe Biden has never, except for when they've had to, you know, come in and do work on his mansions, he's likely never been around these people. He's certainly never been one of them. That much we know. Donald Trump has been rich his whole life, but he's been rich because he employs people who do real serious work. Now, this is a guy, let's juxtapose what you just heard there from Joe to this. This guy is Bob Bartles. He is the head of the Steamfitters Union local in New York. This guy sounds very New York. There was a group of union guys out there the last couple more. He's cheering Donald Trump. Union guys. When's the last time Joe Biden got cheered by a non-pre-screened audience out in the wild? He's never been around one. He hasn't been around one forever. They're scripted moments. Donald Trump in New York, trapped in New York by this jackass judge in this ridiculous trial. And the Steamfitters are out there cheering him and chanting USA, USA, USA. And this is their local. I'm sure he's pissing off the national union. But here he is on Fox.
It was great to see the president come and engaging with the blue collar worker of New York City. We basically built New York. The union movement has made the middle class. And we are very patriotic union and we are pro-America. So my members right now. I put out a poll in my union. President Trump is leading Joe Biden 3-1 on my presidential poll out of my 9,000 members right now. We are very tired of the situation with groceries, inflation, gas prices, illegal immigration, crime. We're living it every day in New York City.
Yep, that's the thing. You can have all the chants, all the photo ops, all the garbage you want. Every day somebody's going to stop and fill up their car, go, Joe Biden. Every day somebody's going to go to the grocery store, Joe Biden. Somebody goes to a fast food restaurant, and you're like, wait a sec, the extra value meal's $15? They remember, it wasn't all that long ago. The Republicans have to do an even better job of reminding them what it was like a few years ago. But people do remember and they recognize this isn't right. This isn't natural. This isn't good. This isn't sustainable for them. Sooner or later, the credit cards will be maxed out and they won't be able to extend things, get forbearance, get forgiveness. It's because of Joe Biden's policies. So for all his talk about, union guys like us, you're not a union guy. How many union bosses, maybe. Union bosses probably own 2-3 mansions. But how many union members own an estate that used to be owned by the DuPont family? Probably none. Joe Biden did, while he was a humble public servant. Just getting by. Yeah, there's no corruption there. No corruption at all. I mean, aside from everything the guy does. But other than that, none. All right, so let's move off. We talked about our senile president, the economy, the economics of the situation. Now let's look up the Donald Trump's trial up in New York. Honest to God, this is it's a joke. If you wrote this in fiction, this wouldn't even make a – is there a law? This wouldn't even make a decent episode of Boston Legal. L.A. Law would have laughed this out, but this is what the Democrats have. This is what the Democrats hope for. They just need a conviction. They don't care why. They don't care what the – Donald Trump has been convicted of a crime. Forget it that it's the crime we just made up. Forget it that it's a misdemeanor we rolled into a felony. And forget it that the statute of limitations had run out on the state level, so we somehow made it a federal crime, even though you can also forget that the government, the federal government, refused to prosecute. And the federal prosecutors looked at it and said there's nothing to go here. We can embarrass him at a minimum. How do they embarrass him? I don't think they'd understand Donald Trump, honestly, or Donald Trump supporters, to be truthful with you when it comes to the concept of embarrassment. I don't mean that to be rude or anything, but I've followed Donald Trump since I'm a kid, and I was a big fan of The Apprentice. You couldn't avoid Donald Trump. His divorce, his affairs, the other, all this stuff is on the cover of People magazine. And it turns out that oftentimes he was the one calling up reporters and leaking dirt on himself because it got him in the papers. So I'm not sure that two attractive women, one a Playboy bunny, another a porn star, saying, "I had an affair with him," is going to cause Donald Trump to go, "Oh, no, don't say that. I wouldn't want people to even think that I'd had relations with an attractive woman. Oh, no, the horror." I think he's perfectly fine with that. And I don't know whether or not he did have the affair. I don't really care if he had the affair. Melania should care. She's the wife, and she's there. So she's either doesn't believe it, or it's come to terms with it, or whatever it is. It's none of my business. I'm not in their marriage, and I don't care about their marriage. I'm not electing a pope. I'm electing a president of the United States. There's a difference. But the idea that they can this trial seems to be twofold. They want the conviction so they can say, Donald Trump is a criminal. Donald Trump is a convicted felon. And so they can try to embarrass him. And with that, Karen McDougal will be testifying. Karen McDougal is a Playboy, former Playboy playmate, very attractive woman. I don't know what she looks like now, but whenever this was alleged to have happened, all the pictures are from. Everybody always uses the best pictures. And so, like, yeah, she's a very attractive woman. Donald Trump would probably say, yeah, no, this lady says I had sex with her. He'd probably be proud of it, that people would even think that. Whether or not it's true doesn't matter. So the idea that Democrats can embarrass him seems bizarre. Now, Donald Trump has a lot of support amongst Christian conservatives. He just does. Not one of them thinks that he is a candidate for sainthood. Not one of them would probably say, you know what, to their children, to their daughter, to their sister, to go, I wish you'd meet a nice man like Donald Trump. Again, unless Donald Trump's marrying my sister, I don't care what he does, right? Why would I care? I know that he'd be a better president than Joe Biden. That's all I care about, because that's all he's running for. He's not running to be my brother-in-law. He's not running to be anything other than president of the United States. So the idea that they can embarrass him, I think, is folly. And the idea that it would matter to his supporters is ridiculous. Especially, I mean, it's not been covered nearly as much, but do you look at Joe Biden's past? He began his vaunted, storied relationship with his wife, the good Reverend Dr. Jill Biden, while she was still married to her first husband. And that's not me saying, it's not me making it up. That is her first husband saying that Joe and her had an affair, and that led to their divorce. That's just, look it up. You can find it for yourself. Devout Catholic that Joe Biden is. One thing you can say about Donald Trump is he's never really portrayed himself as a devout anything. Believer is one thing. Devout is different. Joe Biden can claim he's a devout Catholic and then go to a pro-abortion event and extol the virtues of abortion and go, wait a second, I'm pretty sure that you can be a Democrat in good standing. You can not even say you can be a Christian, but you're a devout Catholic. You can even be a Catholic. You're like, eh, you know, I go to Christmas and Easter. But you can't be a devout Catholic because devout means something, at least it used to. And it's not a buffet Catholic where you go, I'll take some of the, I'll have a couple of the ribs, I'll have some of the chicken, I'm going to pass on the pork chop. And no, that's not how it works. Catholicism, what I know about Catholicism is they just put the slop on your plate and say, this is it. This is it. You're in or you're out. Like, oh, okay, there you go. But they want that conviction, they want the embarrassment. With Joe Biden, you've got the affair that began his current marriage, and you've got Tara Reid. Tara Reid is wildly inconvenient because Tara Reid, unlike, say, E. Jean Carroll, who claimed that at some point, 30 years ago-ish, I swear to God, Democrat women forget what they claim is the most traumatic experience of their lives. They just forget. Christine Blasey Ford. Hey, that guy, Brett Kavanaugh, he tried to rape me. When? I don't know. Where? Not really sure. Okay, do you have any recollection? I just remember that it was someplace. Okay, well, there you go. Columbo's probably not going to be able to solve this one. Good luck with you. And then you've got E. Jean Carroll. Yeah, Donald Trump raped me in a department store dressing room. Really? Department store dressing room? That seems like it's kind of a public place. Somebody might have heard or seen something, and at any moment you could have, if it did happen, which I have my doubts, but if it didn't happen, you could have easily, I don't know, said something aloud. You don't even have to yell. Stop it! Knock it off! And you would have aroused attention. But curiously, no. She doesn't know the year. She doesn't really know. It's Bergdorf Goodman, and that's all you need to know. I don't know, maybe Bergdorf Goodman is noted for their soundproof dressing rooms. Maybe. I doubt it. But Tara Reid has very specific dates. Date for when Joe Biden raped her. That's fair. That's what he did. It's not rape in the intercourse sense, but by legal definition, what he is accused of doing is rape, because not only did she tell people at the time, she told her mother at the time, who then called into Larry King Live and on CNN on tape mentioned it back in the 90s. Now, this would have to be the most elaborate Russian plot in all of human history to have planted that seed just in case Joe Biden, 20 years on, would run for president of the United States. So that's what gives it some credence, that she told people at the time. Now, you could argue all day long that she's crazy and made it up, but you can't argue that she didn't tell people about it. Which is why the answer lies in Joe Biden's Senate papers, which are with the University of Delaware in Wilmington, sealed like the Kennedy assassination documents until after Joe Biden's death. See, if Tara Reid, as she claims, filed a complaint with the personnel department, there'd be some paperwork in there probably. I mean, it could have been expunged and would likely have been expunged by now. But that Joe Biden wouldn't initially allow, and still to this day would not allow, any reporters access to his Senate papers. And it's weird because the executive branch is completely and totally open and at the whims of FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. Congress is different. Congress is not. Congress is exempt from it. Again, it's another example of how they set the rules and they don't live by them. It's not rules that we all have to live by, in this case, just the executive branch. But they should be subject to FOIA requests. They should be subject. There should be a Congressional Records Act that requires the preservation of records. I know that at least when I was there, a senator could purchase the servers, the government servers, on which all of their email traffic and all of their web traffic was conducted on, which if they wanted to, they all wanted to, which would then make sure, because otherwise they go back to the government and then the government would have access to it. If they buy them, then nobody has access to it except for them. And these guys, they don't need servers. They just don't want anybody else to have the servers that have their information on them. And normally they'd be wiped or destroyed or both or whatever. Can't do that unless you're Hillary Clinton in the executive branch. So that should be changed, because I think the American public should know whether or not Tara Reid filed a sexual assault claim against Joe Biden at the time. He'd have some explaining to do. There'd be some journalism to be done. But as it stands, there is no threat of journalism being conducted on Joe Biden. He is insulated from it because of that little D. That little D after his name is always a capital D. And you look closely at it under a jeweler's loop, under 10 times magnification, and you begin to realize that it is not, in fact, a D. It is a little shield that you hold out, and it deflects any and all criticism. It protects you from media inquiry and skepticism. That's how Joe Biden has been able to get away with it. So while they try to paint Donald Trump as a monster, even if Donald Trump did have an affair with Stormy Daniels and did have an affair with Karen McDougal, those were affairs, if they happened. They were not sexual assaults, as Joe Biden has been accused of and never really allowed, never really refuted. He just denies it and then goes about his business. I think he was only asked about it one time. And it's amazing how they've never brought it up since then. They've never really tried to put pressure on him to get access to the congressional records. He could prove. It's another one of those instances, like with the, well, I gave my brother a $200,000 loan. Oh, all right. Well, can you show us giving him $200,000? No, that's a private matter. Why is it a private? You could easily make Republicans look bad. You could torpedo the idea of your corruption if you showed that you gave your brother $200,000 and then he gave you $200,000 back. Because we got him giving you $200,000. We got the check. Same with your degenerate crack-smoking son. We got you saying $50,000 to him so he could buy a truck when he owned two other cars at the time. But and said, well, he paid me back for that. Here's a check from him for $50,000. Just so happens both times it was to the day that both of those people got money from China. But that's beside the point. You could say, here's me giving Hunter $50,000 to buy the truck. Then that explains the $50,000 back. But we don't. He won't. Why? Well, because when was the last time Joe Biden or even Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about this or anybody associated with the campaign? That would be 2 days after never. They're not asked. They don't have to. Tara Reid's complaint could be in those Senate papers, but if nobody asks for it, nobody's going to get it. You can't get to it because the University of Delaware has decided that having access to Joe Biden's papers is way more important than finding out whether or not a rape had occurred. Let that sink in. Nobody's taken to the streets over that one. And of course, we've already determined through what's going on with Israel and Hamas that the left no longer cares about rape. Well, they care about rape only insofar as who is accused of having perpetrated it. Not the concept so much, but the usefulness of the allegation. So it brings us back to the Trump trial. MSNBC is completely and totally desperate to make this into a thing. I think most people, this sort of stuff is already baked into the cake with Donald Trump, and it's an accounting argument that they're making, and nobody really cares. But MSNBC desperately cares, not because they think that this will break Donald Trump. I think it's because they're doing fan service for their audience. And so, like Rachel Maddow has gone to the trial. Joy Reid has gone down to the trial. They're sitting there narrating how they were so close to Donald Trump. Oh, my goodness, they were so close to him. And Joy Reid even dusted off Brian Stelter, the human potato who used to work at CNN, the Weeble wobbled on down to Joy Reid's studios at 30 Rockefeller Plaza. And they were talking about David Pecker. And yes, go ahead and giggle, but it's a man's real last name. And he used to be the publisher of the National Enquirer. And as the publisher of the National Enquirer, he engaged in catch and kill. Catch and kill is you buy a story. You then, you know, you buy the rights to a story. You pay somebody. Give me your story. I have exclusive rights. You can't talk to anybody else about your story. And whether or not you publish it doesn't matter. You now own the rights. That person has sold them. Think of it like Kramer in Seinfeld when he sold his life story to Jay Peterman when Elaine was writing Jay Peterman's autobiography. And he started to tell a story from his life, and Elaine said, you can't tell that story. You sold it to Peterman. You're not supposed to be able to talk about it. You sign a non-disclosure agreement. Now, it's weird because the two women who signed non-disclosure agreements, at least two women, Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, are both and have always been talking about it. They're in clear and total violation of their non-disclosure agreements. But we're told that they are trustworthy. And Donald Trump isn't. They got a pittance, essentially, from a guy who's worth billions of dollars to just go away. That gives credence to the fact that maybe this didn't happen. But that doesn't matter. Joy Reid and the human potato Stelter decided that the virtue of journalism needs to be protected from the checkbook journalism of the National Enquirer. You want to talk about high horses? Listen to these two.
I'm gonna call on your media expertise. He did a thing that they don't even normally do in checkbook journalism, as he called it, buying really juicy stories and then not publishing them. Mm-hmm. And he even said in court, which I found kind of stunning, that with the Karen McDougal story, they were like, let's buy it, but we do want to use it just after the election. Mm-hmm. We do want to even use the story about the guy who claims there's an illegitimate son. They just didn't want to use it until after the election. Like, he seemed to really help that part of that case.
This idea of checkbook journalism, which people are hearing this phrase for the first time, it's a contradiction. There are no checkbooks in real journalism. We're not out there paying for stories in the real journalism world. Yeah. But, you know, it's specifically because Donald Trump can't exist in a real journalism world. He doesn't want pesky fact checkers. He doesn't want people telling him that he's lying. He's created this alternative media universe, right? Yeah. True Social is an example. But The Enquirer was the key example in 2015 and 2016. He built up with his friend David Pecker this alternative system to get out his news to his voters. And we're seeing it be dissected now in real time in this trial. This idea of friends of Pecker, FOPs, that you're a friend of Pecker.
Yeah.
And so Trump gets a free ride. It has nothing to do with journalism. In fact, David Pecker, he's revealing himself not to be a journalist, not to be a newsman. He's an advertiser.
He's an advertiser.
He's a marketer, and his advertisement, his product was Donald Trump.
Well, you got to love that. It listening to that, no checkbook journalism. We don't do that. We don't. People getting paid for stories. People do get paid for stories, particularly in entertainment media all the time. But the idea, we don't have checkbook journalism. That's not what we do. That is like a tramp arguing about how immoral a prostitute is. One person will sleep with anybody, and another person will sleep with anybody for money. You go, can you believe the morals on that one over there doing it for money? I can actually understand the motivation of the one doing it for money. You doing it for just, you know, whatever reason is a little bit different. Sorry, but if you shouldn't, there's another word I can't use that's particularly harsh, but you're going to argue that prostitutes are somehow less than you, because you're doing it for a different reason that, dare I say, has nothing to do with love either. You will prostitute yourself out for not money, for a political agenda. And I mean, it's weird talking about sex when you're referring to two people who are literally like, if you just told me that they crawled out from under a bridge, I'd go, yeah, well, that makes sense. But Stelter looks like he hasn't seen the sun in like 6 months. He looks like Darth Vader when he was dying at the end of Return of the Jedi when Luke took the helmet off. Like, I want to see you with my own eyes. Like, oh, my God. hideous. Put the mask back on. That's what you want to say when you look at Stelter. But these people, I love how they love themselves. They love themselves in ways that normal human beings never will, in ways that normal human beings couldn't. Because normal human beings live in reality. These people live in a world where Donald Trump is the root of all evil, and every Democrat is as pure as the wind-driven cocaine that Hunter Biden used to snort off of prostitutes' rear ends. And you go, hey, wait a second. There's a lot of questions about Joe Biden. Well, did you hear that Donald Trump maybe had sex with another woman? Yeah, I know. I was alive in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. I'm aware of that. Well, what do you think of that? He might have lied about it. He might have. Of course, they might have lied, too. There's one person in this that signed a non-disclosure agreement who sure seems to be disclosing an awful lot. One might look at that as making that person a little bit less than trustworthy. Yeah, but Michael Cohen. Oh, yes, Michael Cohen, the guy who went to jail for perjury, is your star witness, too. Now, it's weird. Every conservative or right-of-center think tank that ever once picked up a dime that may have fallen out of ExxonMobil's pocket is forever tainted, no matter how long ago they got that money, is forever tainted as a tool of the oil industry because of that dime. But a guy who does time for committing perjury in an unrelated case is a truth teller. As long as he's telling the truth that Democrats want to hear about a Republican Democrats hate. It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, talk to me about checkbook journalism, Brian. Enjoy. Just a couple of prostitutes on the corner talking about how somebody else's prostitution is wrong. Spare me. All right, we've got a little bit of time left here. And I want to play you this just to show you how far gone these weirdos are. The drag queen. This is out of Connecticut, I believe. Drag queens for Palestine. Just, I really, really want to take up a collection for these people. I lost a good friend. Not exactly the most ambitious friend in the world, but a good friend from high school turned me on to The Replacements because he lost his mind during the Gulf War after 9/11. And it's one of those, it's our fault, and they don't hate us. They hate what we're doing over there and blah, 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 blah. And I offered to fly him over to Baghdad so he could go talk to Muqtadir al-Sadr. And I said, as an added bonus, you could explain to him how, you know, he doesn't hate all of us for being Americans, for not being Muslim, but because of our government policies. And I said, as an added bonus, I'd even pay to fly his body back afterwards. And he hung up on me, and I don't think I've spoken to him since. He was very mad about that. I thought it was a good point. It's a fair point. What am I supposed to do, leave his body over there? It's a nice offer. The same mentality, these queers for Palestine, and always stand with the Palestinian people. And part of the reason why I think that so many college campuses are going crazy is because the most favored group in America are the transgender, the cross-dressers and all that, people with gender dysphoria. They've come out in favor of a Palestinian state and wiping out Israel. So I was like, okay, well, we're all oppressed. There's a little bit of difference there. But no, this Connecticut queers drag queen story hour for Palestine thing. Now, listen to this. People, adults, willingly brought their kids to this and sat there with their kids while this giant man in a dress and big fake boobs and a bouffant said this.
Today what we're going to do is we're going to shout, Free Palestine. Can I hear that? Free Palestine! If you're a drag queen and you know it, shout,
Free Palestine!
If you're a drag queen and you know it, and you really want to show it, you're a drag queen and you know it, shout,
Free Palestine!
Excellent!
No, they're not groomers. None dare call them groomers. But the parents are sitting there going for this, and they're like, you know what? Take up a collection. You're wealthy Connecticut white liberals. Send just 10 drag queens for Palestine over to Gaza and then arrange for, does FedEx return bodies? I don't know. There's got to be some way to get them back here, but we'll figure it out. In the name of justice or something, yay, dead queers for Palestine is what they'd be after that. All right, that is enough for today, ladies, for the week, really. Let us get on with the weekend and get ready for the Weekend Effin' Review. I'm already ready for that, believe you me. So thanks for listening. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, live tonight, 12:01. Well, the show is live. I'll probably still be awake, but I don't even know if I could do it live. That could be interesting. All right, we'll look at that in the future. Have a great weekend otherwise, and I'll see you back here on Monday.